لله الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه. أما بعد، proceed. This is again a continuation of what we started before, misconceptions dispelled about women in Islam. So inshallah we will proceed today with the topic of al-qiwama, which is leadership of men. Men have a position of leadership over women. As I said, usually when you talk about a matter that is subject of debate or controversy, I'm not talking about within us Muslims, but with others, it would be helpful to use comparison. Because without the comparison, you'll do so much more effort. You'll lose your breath. But once you talk about the position of leadership, and you bring this verse up from Genesis, chapter 3, verse 16, unto the woman he said, I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children, and thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over you. Okay. Now, ultimately, is this much different from the Quranic statement, الرِّجَالُ قَوَّامُونَ عَلَى النِّسَاءِ, men have a position of leadership over women, بِمَا فَضَّلَ اللَّهُ بَعْضَهُمْ عَلَى بَعْضٍ, by that which Allah has favored some of them over others, وَبِمَا أَنْفَقُوا مِنْ أَمْوَالِهِمْ, and by that which they spend, or by spending from their money and property. Is it different? What are the differences? This is the verse that is in the Quran, الرِّجَالُ قَوَّامُونَ عَلَى النِّسَاءِ, men have a position of leadership over women. بِمَا فَضَّلَ اللَّهُ بَعْضَهُمْ عَلَى بَعْضٍ, because of what Allah has favored some of them over others with. وَبِمَا أَنْفَقُوا مِنْ أَمْوَالِهِمْ, and because of them spending of their money. بِمَا أَنْفَقُوا مِنْ أَمْوَالِهِمْ, it's not like, you know, because I have money then I rule. No. It is because I am responsible to provide for this family, I make the decisions. If I am responsible, I make the decisions. Right? Like if I am in the White House, I make the decision of war and peace because I'm the chief, whatever, and therefore I'll be responsible for the consequences, and if I am responsible for the consequences, I get to make the decision. If I am the captain of that plane, then I get to make the decision because ultimately I will be asked about the consequences. If I have to be asked about the consequences, I get to make the decision. Why wouldn't it be the other way around? The woman is asked about the consequences and responsible to maintain and so on. Because it is impossible. You know, throughout the history, you know, it has been impossible. Even here in America, there has still not been one woman president in the history. Because times are not always good, and if you have desk jobs, you know, millions of desk jobs here in America and now, well, that's anomalous. Everybody knows it's anomalous, right? It's anomalous. It's a paper economy. It's an anomalous condition. We have millions of desk jobs where women can perform like men, but in the history of humanity, jobs were a lot harder. People needed to gather wood from, you know, the jungle. People needed to take care of sheep, and people needed to go to the battlefield to defend their countries, and people needed to, you know, work under circumstances that were extremely harsh. Therefore, it had to be the man who would be responsible. And if he is responsible, then he gets to make the decision, because that is ultimately only fair. So eventually he will make the decision. But now, the reason why you bring this up first, this verse, Genesis chapter 3, verse 16, says clearly to the woman that the man would rule over you, your husband would rule over you, is to show the difference. Now, the language of the Quran is actually better. Because even in other translations of this verse, وَيَسُودُ الرَّجُلُ عَلَيْكِ, and the man shall become your master. And in other translations, you will be subject to the man. So there are many translations, but in the Quranic, in verbiage, it is رِجَلُ قَوَّمُونَ. قَوَّمُونَ, men have a position of leadership over women. But قَوَّمُونَ does not only have to do with leadership, right? قَوَّمُونَ comes from what? What does قَامَ mean? Stood up. Stood. قَامَ, stood up. You know, يَقُومُ, stand. And what does Al-Qayyum mean? Allah, Al-Hayy, Al-Qayyum. Allah, la ilaha illahu, Al-Hayyu, Al-Qayyum. Allah, there is no one but Him, Al-Hayy, the living, Al-Qayyum, the maintainer, sustainer, you know. So, qiwama, does not only infer leadership, it infers simultaneously with leadership, sustenance, maintenance, caretaking, to take care of, to look after, to take care of. So, it combines the two. Whereas the biblical terminology here does not combine the two. It just says that the man will rule over you, shall be your master, or, you know, you'll be subject to the man, etc. But it does not combine the two aspects. The word قَوَّمُونَ very likely and very intelligently combines the two aspects of that position. It is leadership and responsibility combined together, and they come together as well. So, just wherever you remember the word qawwam, remember Allah la ilaha illahu al-hayyu al-qayyum, ayatul kursi, maintainer. So that you understand where the root comes from, the root of this word comes from. It comes from, you know, establishing, it comes from leadership, and it comes from sustenance and maintenance as well. Okay, is this the only difference here between the biblical and the Quranic, verses? Look at the biblical verse. Unto the woman he said, I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children, and thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee, you. It made the whole thing as a punishment, even conception. Do you know that the Prophet ﷺ said that, Abdurrahman al-Shaheed, do you know who is the martyr of my ummah? And then they said the shaheed is the one who dies in the battlefield. But he said then the shuhada of my ummah are few. And then he mentioned this very passage of shuhada, and he said, وَالْمَرْأَةُ تَمُوتُ بِجَمْعٍ شَهِيدٍ, and the woman dying in labor is a martyr. So now the Quran puts the issue of conception, pregnancy, and childbirth in a completely different perspective here. This is the woman's struggle, the woman's jihad. It is not a punishment because she ate from the tree. Because all of this story had to do with the fact that the Bible blames her for tempting Adam to eat from the apple tree. We don't know what tree it was, by the way, as Muslims. Apple, not an apple, it's just a tree. Because what's the big deal? If it is apple or, apricot? So the issue here is completely different. It is completely, completely different. Even when in the concept of hijab, why does the Bible say that she should cover her head? Yes. Why? Because the man is Herod's master, you know. And why does man must cover his head? Because God is his master. So it's God, man, woman. Whereas in the Quran, it tells her to cover, you know, ذَلِكَ أَدْنَا يُعْرَفْنَا فَلَا يُؤْذَيْنَ قُلْ أَزْوَاجِكَ وَمَهَاتِكَ وَنِسَاءَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ يُدْنِينَ عَلَيْهِنَّ مِنْ جَلَابِيبِهِنَّ ذَلِكَ أَدْنَا أَنْ يُعْرَفْنَا فَلَا يُؤْذَيْنَ. Tell your wives, your daughters, and the believing women to cover themselves, cover the entirety of their body. ذَلِكَ أَدْنَا أَنْ يُعْرَفْنَا فَلَا يُؤْذَيْنَ. This is more conducive to being known as chaff and not harassed. So that they are known as chaff, so that, you know, and many of the sisters do recognize this. The difference between being covered and not being covered. The man is talking to a person, you know, mind to mind, versus to being focused on other aspects. So, you know, so she is saying that she is not for sale by covering herself, versus the biblical justification that, you know, she covers her head because the man, but for the man doesn't cover because God is the master. The same here, you know, conception, pregnancy. This is the woman's struggle and jihad in Islam. It is a punishment because she tempted Adam to eat from the tree, which Islam does not recognize that concept at all. In fact, when they were blamed together, they were blamed together. But when one of them had to be singled out, it was not Eve, it was Adam that was singled out by the blame. So, and the same applies to the concept of leadership. This is coming as a punishment here in the biblical narration. In the Quran, it says, it justifies it by ratiocination, rational proof, a very logical argument. If he will be responsible to maintain, he should be able to make the decisions. Right? That is what basically the says was. Activists, بِمَا فَضَّلَ اللَّهُ بَعْضَهُمْ عَلَى بَعْضٍ, because of what Allah has favored some of them over others, did the women receive other favors? Yes. Compassion, for instance. Isn't that a favor that would enable them to be good mothers, that would make them more worthy of one's companionship than the fathers? Such as when the Prophet ﷺ was asked about this, who's most worthy of my good companionship. He said, your mother, your mother, your mother, and then he said, who, and then who, and then he said, your father. So isn't that a favor? That is a favor, but with leadership, you do need certain qualities for leadership. For, like, you do need certain qualities for motherhood, you do need certain qualities for leadership. Those qualities, the man possesses them more than the woman. So that is why was chosen by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to lead the household. So that is the different perspective, which is not to be underestimated, not to be underestimated. Now, the issue of qiwama is an issue that is misunderstood by many men and women. Qiwama is not because what many of the sisters think that, you know, because you stand you know, of your money, I also spend my money, then the qiwama. Qiwama is a necessity. There has got to be a head for every institution. If you have an institution, it does not have a hierarchy. No hierarchy within a state, you know, a country, a company, a ship, a plane, anything. If you have no hierarchy, you know, within the ship, it sinks. You know, you have to have a hierarchy. The country, that position of qawama or leadership is a necessity to maintain the structure of the family. Because it is not possible that you make a hierarchy for every institution. but the institution of the family, which is the one that actually goes through more turmoils and hardships and ups and downs and instability than any other institution. You know, companies, even, you know, this, what will happen? You know, you take your money, I take my money, and we separate. That's fine. But the institution of the family, there are consequences that are beyond you take your share, I take my share, and let's end the corporation. There are consequences that are greater than this. Therefore, if the company needs to have a head, or the corporation needs to have a head, then certainly the institution, this institution of family needs to have a head. So that head was appointed by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and as we said, for the qualities that men have, they were chosen. But, so it is not because I spend of my money, so that if she's making more money, then she gets the lead. It will be awkward. It doesn't work. It is not natural. Therefore, it will lead to the disruption of this family, or it would lead to major harm to the family. So when the brother gets laid off, his qiwama is not going to be taken back from him the next day. You know, but certainly the brother who waits, who stays home and pushes his wife to work, and he's just, he's like a slacker. He doesn't go out to find the job, or doesn't do his best, and doesn't, you know, send CVs. He will lose the qiwama whether or not he's meant to lose it. But naturally, the word qiwama in and of itself, unlike the biblical verse that says that the husbands will rule over you, the word qiwama combines the two aspects together. Leadership, responsibility, maintenance, that he will have to sustain, he will lead, and he will sustain. So ultimately, if he, you know, if he's sick and he can't go to work, and he has like a good, noble wife that takes care of him, he should not, that is not a problem, and he should not lose the qiwama because of this. But if he is just lazy, and he makes his wife go to work, and he stays behind to, you know, read the papers and so on, he will lose that qiwama, whether or not it is meant for her to take it back. But he will eventually lose it. So that is one aspect that has to be understood, that the qiwama comes as a responsibility and a privilege that are interlocked. You know, the responsibility and the privilege, they're interlocked. You can't really disentangle them. So That's one concept about the qiwama that has to be understood. The other concept about the qiwama is that this position of leadership means that the wife will have to obey every command from the husband? No. We said before, the Prophet ﷺ said, إِنَّمَا الطَّاعَةُ فِي الْمَعْرُوفِ. Most certainly, obedience is only in that which is ma'roof. Ma'roof is what? That which is known to be good. That which is known to be good. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَعَشِرُهُنَّ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ, and live with them. It is translated sometimes as kindness, in kindness. But it also means according to that which is known to be good, that which is known by human instinct to be good. Therefore, if he tells her, raise your hands and face the wall until I come back from work, does she have to obey him? No, she doesn't. Even though raising her hands is not haram, certainly she will not obey him if he commands her to do anything that is haram. But if he tells her to do something that is not ma'roof, not known to be reasonable, good, not known to be good by human instinct and reason, then she doesn't have to obey him in this case. It goes even beyond this. Do you know that the Muslim scholars said that the man cannot, you know, let's say, you know, and this is a little bit, you know, but let's use that example. A man cannot order his wife to take a shower just because he wants to take a shower. He can't make that command. If she is done with her period, or if she has sexual impurity, then he can command her to take a shower because of the permissibility of having conjugal relations, which is part of this contract, this mutual contract between them, that he can command her to take a shower. If she is not Muslim and she has major sexual impurity, then he cannot oblige her to take a shower. Because in her own religion, she does not believe in not a shower, a ritual bath. She does not believe that she has to take a bath after having major sexual impurity. Therefore, he does not have the right to command her, oblige her to take the ritual bath. So, therefore, the concept of qiyama is not an absolute authority for men over women. It pertains to that which is known to be sensible, that which is known to be acceptable of a husband to ask of his wife. It is acceptable, you know, أَلَّا يُطِئْنَ فُرُشَكُمْ مَنْ تَكْرَهُونَ, that she will not allow in his home someone that he dislikes to come into his home. أَلَّا تَخْرُجَ مِنْ بَيْتِهِ إِلَّا بِإِذْنِهِ, that she will not leave his home without taking his permission. This is qiwama. This is certainly qiwama. This is agreed upon qiwama. These are rights that men have. There are things that are clear like this. There are things that are clear that the man cannot have the right to command his wife to do. And there are things that are a little bit in the middle. But not everything this authority is not an absolute authority. And it does not pertain to everything. It pertains to that which a man can ask of his wife to do or not to do. This position of leadership, like I said, if you look at, if the wife wants to work, for instance, the wife wants to work, well, that mutual agreement between us, that marriage, involves my right to have a wife, full-time wife. That will take care of my kids, a full-time mother, and so on. Then we will have to agree whether you will go to work or not. But let us say she would work at home. Then the scholars will say if she would work at home and she's not going to leave the house, then there will be one of two choices here. She's doing a job that does not harm the honor of the family or does not harm the family. And at the same time, the job does not restrict her. So she can't, by mutual agreement with the husband, she can go out to work, she can work at home and everything. But without mutual agreement, she cannot block, you know, from 6 p.m. to 12 a.m. or 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. for work. But if she does work on contractual basis, then the correct position, that's the position that Nuqadama shows in Mughni, is that he cannot tell her no. So if she works as a tailor, for instance, and she works on contractual basis, piece by piece, and then she can move that work around. She can work, you know, at 2 o'clock, 2 p.m., 1 a.m., then he can't say no to her because he does not occupy the 24 hours. But she will not block, you know, a certain time for work because he may need her, could need her, and so on and so forth. Let's finish when we come back after the prayer. I think it's time. We're still talking about the qiyam, or the position of leadership and sustenance, responsibility, maintenance. And we said that, you know, they come together and they interlock, and it's a great instrument and to compromise those who are under your care. The Prophet said as in Hadith in Muslim, كفى بالمرء إثما أن يحبس عمن يملك قوته. It is enough sin for a man to withhold sustenance from those under his care. And in the report of Abi Dawood, it says, كَفَى بِالْمَرْءِ إِثْمًا أَنْ يُضَيَّعَ مَنْ يَقُوتُ. It is enough sin for a man to neglect or compromise those who are under his care. So, like I said, that position is not a privilege as much as it is a responsibility. And the captain of the ship is the last one to jump off the ship, right? And if the man feels this way, so he feels responsible for the family, like he will secure their physical, financial, emotional, educational needs before his own. Before his own, because he is the captain of the ship, and he must make sure that everybody on board is content and, you know, satisfied. Then he will have a very high credit line, and that's how mentioned in the tenth kirana, so that they don't squander the wealth, they don't squander the credit. You must first have a very high credit line, so that you can spend from it. But if you're spending from a low credit line, you will run into trouble. That respect of the wife has for you, or sense of, you know, respect and, you know, her recognition of your leadership, is a cumulative process that does not happen overnight. It develops with time. The more she sees that you are a good caretaker, the higher your credit line and heart in her heart will become, and vice versa. And to spend of that credit line, you have to be very smart. And usually I use those examples because they really read. If the husband makes a big fuss, about the salt in the food, or the position of the sofa, or the color of the wall, he is squandering his wealth. He's using that credit very recklessly and stupidly, because, you know, obedience is also not infinite. It's finite. And you have to spend from it reasonably. So if you want to save your, if you want to press the pedal, all the time, you ruin it. You have to press the pedal at the right time. And that is when it is a decision that you're quite certain will affect the integrity of the family, the security of the family, the religion of the family, the future of the kids, things of that nature. And this is when you demand your position as leadership, demand to sort of activate the position of leadership. If you're activating it all the time, then when the right time, when the time where you really need it comes, you'll not have it, because it has been abused. Credit has been abused. It applies to everything in life. Even presidents, they have political assets. They spend from it. If they squander it, then when the time comes to make a real tough decision, they will not be able to make it, because they squandered their political assets. They squandered their credit. So that's how men should understand the concept of tiwana. Now, from the end of the women, from the side of the women, what if the man is making requests that are not very reasonable, but you can't really prove them to be unreasonable, but they're free, you know, because this is very subtle. This is not, you know, this is a continuum, spectrum. It's not black and white, it's not this or that. So the man can be irritating. He makes requests that you cannot really call them unreasonable, but he makes them frequently, he makes them at times annoying and aggravating. In this case, what the woman has to do is she has to respect the rules of the corporation or resign. Okay. If you work in a corporation, you have to respect the bylaws of the corporation or resign. If you belong to a country, you have to respect the rules of that country or immigrate. But you see how the Prophet ﷺ did not touch the idols in Mecca for as long as he was in Mecca, did not touch the idols. Yes, he broke all of the idols when he came back and entered Mecca, but Mecca was under his authority at the time. But for the 13 years that he was in Mecca, he did not touch the idols. But what about Ibrahim? Because many people would use that. Ibrahim did not have authority when he broke the idols, smashed them into pieces. But Ibrahim was directed by Allah to bring about the final confrontation at that time. Wasn't that the final confrontation? It was. He was directed by Allah that this is the time to bring about the ultimate, the final confrontation with those people. That's it with those people. So he broke the idol. But had Ibrahim wanted to, had Allah meant for Ibrahim to live in this village more, he would have not broken the idols like the Prophet ﷺ did in Mecca for 13 years, 12 and a half. He did not touch the idols. So as long as you're in a country, you respect the rules until you can change them. As long as you are in a corporation, you respect the bylaws or resign. As long as you are in an institution of family that has a hierarchy and a head, you respect the bylaws of the family or you leave. When can you leave? You know, in the biblical law, she can't leave. And this is the greatest injustice to women, that she is locked into this relationship that could sometimes be detrimental to her entire being, and she can't exit. And she cannot exit. Yeah, the Protestants have divorce, but the Protestants have a lot of things that don't have anything to do with, you know, it's just a religion that was made more than 1,500 years after Jesus, peace be upon him, was raised. So, the issue here, and we're talking about Christianity, Catholic and Orthodox Christianity. So, the woman can leave when she is convinced that she will not be able to carry out her functions as a righteous Muslim wife in this marriage anymore. She's certain it's not working. She has enough resentment. She has enough resentment that she is quite confident that it is not going to work out. I will not be able to be a dutiful wife. That is what Fatima came and said to the Prophet ﷺ, إِنِّي وَلَكِنِّي أَكْرَهُ الْكُفْرَ فِي الْإِسْلَامِ إِنِّي لَا أَعِبُ عَلَى ثَابِتٍ فِي خُلُقٍ وَرَدِينٍ. I do not find anything wrong, where I do not discredit any of Sabbath religiosity or manners. So we are a religious, well-mannered person. One of the great companions, Sabbath ibn Qais. he was a poet, he was the carrier of the haraya, or the flag of the Prophet ﷺ, one of the great companions, and she said, I can't find anything wrong with his deed, I can't find anything wrong with his manners, but I hate to be ungrateful while a Muslim. Ungrateful meaning what? Meaning that she cannot conduct her functions as a grateful wife, as a beautiful wife. So she will takfur, not to disbelieve in God, but she will takfur, be ungrateful to her husband, not being able to perform as a wife. And that's why the Prophet ﷺ allowed her to have khula, or to separate from Sabit ibn Qais. Now, there is a hadith that is not authentic in which the Prophet ﷺ was quoted to have said, Al-Mukhtari'at hun al-Munafiqat. The ones who after khala are the hypocrite ones. This is not an authentic hadith, but the meaning of this hadith is justifiable if her exterior is different from her interior. If she says that which she does not feel. If she says, I hate him, and she doesn't hate him. She basically wants to just, you know, have free time. You know, or have a different man, or something of that nature. So in this case, yes, she is hypocritical, because she is saying that which she does not believe. Her interior and exterior have disengaged, and once your interior and exterior disengage, that's nifaq, hypocrisy. But there is another hadith that can be used that is actually stronger, which is أَيُّمَ مْرَأَةٍ سَأَلَ زَوْجَهَا الطَّلَاقَ مِنْ غَيْرِ بَأْسٍ فَحَرَامٌ عَلَيْهَا رَيْحَةُ الْجَنَّةِ. Whenever a woman asks her wife, her husband for a divorce without harm befalling her, then the odor of paradise will be prohibited for her. She shall not smell the odor of paradise. It will be forbidden for her to smell the odor of paradise. Without harm here, was Thabit ibn Qais beating his wife day and night? He was one of the great Sahaba. She couldn't find anything wrong with him. Not his religiosity, not his manners. A perfect man. You know, one of the great companions. But the emotion of harm, she doesn't like him. She hates him. It turns out that she did not like how he looked. But isn't that her right? Isn't that her right? Isn't that your right? Don't you get to select, and don't you get to say, no, I don't like this, I like, well, she also has that right. So, but she was not happy in her marriage. She just can't live anymore in this marriage. Therefore, that emotional harm is considered harm. That emotional harm is considered harm. But as long as she is part of that corporation, she goes by the bylaws of that corporation. Until it comes to a point to where, you know, it just overflows, like she can't take it anymore, because the man is quite aggravating and makes, you know, ridiculous demands that cannot be, each and every one of them is not ridiculous. That combines the arm, and she feels inside that she can't perform as a righteous wife anymore. Then she can ask for khula. She will have to remind herself of the consequences for the children, for this, for that, and this is a major decision. And she has this authentic hadith in front of her eyes. Whenever a woman asks her husband for a divorce without harm afflicting her or befalling her, the fragrance or the odor of paradise will be forbidden to her. She will have this hadith to consider. And if she really thinks that she has this much harm to justify that separation and breaking the family apart, then it's permissible for her as a last resort, the sour medicine, an exit out of a relationship that is not conducive to any good anymore. So she was not left under the leadership because, you know, Islam is about emancipation of humanity from all bounds except those of Allah. So you're emancipated from, you know, servitude to every being but Allah. From every being. So that is her emancipation. She does not feel locked into this relationship. There is a point, you know, you're not going to get out of that relationship for those considerations that we mentioned, you know, the importance of the family, the breakdown of the family is the breakdown of the society. There is much to say about this. So she has a responsibility and obligation to consider all of that. But at one point, if it's not workable anymore, then she is not locked into this relationship. There is a way out. So that is as far as Kivana and the thing that the issue of obedience. Obedience is not absolute. Obedience is limited. Obedience is only in that which is permissible, and that also which is known to be sensible. But, you know, when it comes to the other issue now, another issue that pertains to Tiwana, which is, should the woman's input be, should women be invited to contribute by, you know, rationalizing the reasoning, giving their input to the course of the family, the strategic planning for the family. Not only, you know, the short-term tactics or short-term planning, but strategic planning for the family. Because we said that you will save your authority until the right time where there is a strategic decision that will affect the security of the family or something, the future of the kids, etc. But then, even then, will the woman's input be valuable? Absolutely. If it was valuable, if on the Salama's input with regard to Sulh al-Hudaybiyyah, the Treaty of Hudaybiyyah, you know, when the Sahaba felt extremely saddened by the treaty, that it gave the kuffar too much, that is part of the Islam's pursuit of security. Because once there is security, if ideas come head to head, the Islamic theory will not be prevailed by any other theory. If you let ideas come head to head, Islamic theory will prevail. As Ibn Hazm said, there are two different types of prevailing, zuhur. فَإِنَّ هُنَاكَ ظُهُورَ السَّيْفِ وَالسِّنَانِ وَإِنَّ هُنَاكَ ظُهُورَ الْحُجَّةِ وَالْبَيَانِ أَمَّا ظُهُورُ السَّيْفِ وَالسِّنَانِ فهو تارة لنا وتارة علينا وأما ظهور الحجة والبيان فهو لنا دائما أبدا. Ibn Hazm says there are two different types of prevailing or dominance. The dominance of the sword and the spear. The dominance of power. And Sayf wa Sinan. And then there is the dominance of al-Hujjah wal-Bayan. Hujjah wal-Bayan. The proof and evidence. So the dominance of the sword and the spear is what sometimes for us and sometimes against us. But the dominance of the proof and evidence is all of ours. So if you let ideas come head to head, Islam will prevail. That's why the Prophet ﷺ signed the contract or the treaty of the Hudaybiyyah. Even though the clauses were unfair to the Muslims, but he preferred to sign it so that there would be security in the peninsula to allow for the ideas to come head to head and for the Islamic ideas to prevail, and they did. Extremely fast. Within just 2 years, from year 6 after Hijrah to Fath Mecca, which was what? 8 after Hijrah, within 2 years. He moved into Mecca with 100,000 followers and opened Mecca without fighting because he had 100,000 followers, 10,000 followers, I'm sorry. The 100,000 came with him in Hajjat al-Wada'. 10,000 followers. And he got into Mecca without fighting. So the idea here is that when the Sahaba said, too saddened by the treaty because it was so unfair to the Muslims and had a lot of double standards, and they did not want to end their ihram, the state of ihram, you know, they wanted to proceed and make umrah and so on, and the Prophet ﷺ was saddened by the Sahaba's resistance to shave and end their ihram. Umm Salama suggested to the Prophet ﷺ to simply not tell them anything but walk out and shave his head and that's it, and do not talk to anyone, walk back into his tent. So he walked out, shaved his head, walked back, and all the Sahaba, they were, you know, they were actually shaving their head to the point of, you know, inflicting wounds on their scalp because they were so saddened that they were shaving for each other, they were bleeding. But they followed. They saw the Prophet do it. They felt that it is not, it's a done deal. There is no bargaining anymore. We can't negotiate anymore. It's a done deal. The Prophet saved everybody. So that the advice of Selena was very valuable, not only for strategic planning of the family, but this is a state matter. So the input would be certainly valued. Not only that it would be valued, it must be entertained, like the professor said, he's entertained the input of his wife. And qiwama also does not mean that when she gives you the input will always, although although women are asked to give the input in a way that is gentle and nice, but it does not mean that she will not talk back to you. Because here is the hadith that you could read. It's reported by Bukhari and Muslim from Umar ibn Khattab. He says, we, the people of Quraysh, used to control our women, but when we came to the Ansar, we found that they were a people who were controlled by their women. So our women started to adopt the ways of the Ansari women. One day I got angry with my wife, and she argued with me. She talked back to me. And I did not like her arguing with me. She said, why do you object to me arguing with you or talking back to you? By Allah, the wives of the Prophet ﷺ argue with him or talk back to him. Because you have to keep in mind, how could anyone talk back to the Prophet or argue with the Prophet? That was his role as a husband. You know, if you are a general in the army at home, you are not General so-and-so, you're a dad. Or you are the husband. So you have to understand the different roles that you have to play in life. If you are a CEO of a company, you cannot carry the same aura of the CEO of the company back to your home, because this way it's not tolerable, unbearable. Because at home she is a wife, he is a son, and there is a mother. You are a CEO of the company, but she should wash her feet, you should put her shoes on and so forth. And even if you have a servant, you don't let the servant do this. You do it yourself, because it's your mother. So different roles at different times, different, you know, conditions. So this is all just a discussion of the issue of qiwama. If you understand it this way, and you understand the difference between Genesis and the Quran, رجال قومنا على النساء, and you understand that the qiwama was not a punishment for the women, and you understand the extent of qiwama that we have, that it is not, you know, a license to do whatever you want, it's not absolute authority, it's restricted authority, then you'll be able to talk about this issue with anyone. And we'll defer the next issue is about hijab. Defer this the next time, inshallah.